from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer. After weeks of protests and pressure to fire him, San Francisco Police Chief Greg Suhr resigned yesterday. We'll discuss what comes next for the SFPD as it continues dealing with questions about its use of deadly force, racist and homophobic texts by officers, and more, all without a permanent police chief. Then at 9:30, Orange County Democrat Loretta Sanchez is running for Barbara Boxer's U.S. Senate seat. She'll join us to talk about what kind of senator she'd be and how she differs from fellow Democrat Kamala Harris. We'll get started with Forum right after this. And welcome once again to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer in today for Mina Kim. Well, after weeks of vowing to stay put, despite protests and calls for his firing, San Francisco Police Chief Greg Suhr suddenly resigned yesterday. Mayor Ed Lee asked for his resignation just hours after yet another deadly police shooting, this one a young black woman who had been driving an apparently stolen car in the city's Bayview neighborhood. Here's what the mayor had to say.
To the citizens of San Francisco, we must push forward harder than ever to reform the police department, to restore trust with every community while keeping our city safe. And in this solemn moment, we must put aside politics and begin to heal the city.
And the question now many are asking this morning is, now what? What is ahead for the SFPD? And we are going to, because this is a half-an-hour segment, open the phone lines right away. We'd love to hear from you, get your thoughts on what has transpired, not just in the last 24 hours, but in the last almost year now, many scandals and issues around the police department. 866-733-6786 is the number to call. 866-733-6786. Would particularly like to hear from someone in law enforcement. If you're a SFPD officer, your thoughts would be welcome. You can also email us. It's forum@kqed.org. Joining me now is KQED's Alex Emsley, who has been covering this and many other SFPD issues for many months now. Alex, good morning.
Good morning, Scott.
This, from the tone of the mayor and everything leading up to this yesterday, seemed like a resignation the mayor didn't really want to ask for. He was very much behind Greg Suhr. He said a lot of good things, complimentary things about him yesterday, even as he was accepting his resignation. What is your sense of how this transpired, why it became untenable to continue with Greg Suhr as the police chief?
Well, we had, since the Mario Woods shooting last December, there have now been two fatal shootings in San Francisco. And the last one yesterday in San Francisco's Bayview district was of a 27-year-old black woman. We don't know her name yet, but indications are that it was another example of a shooting that could have been prevented had reforms that are underway that Chief Suhr has started really been in place in the SFPD. And that's something that the mayor said himself. He said this is not changing quickly enough. And I don't want to put these words in the mayor's mouth, but that people are dying because the changes aren't happening quickly enough. And for some reason, use of force continues to be used potentially illegitimately.
You know, for many years now, the SFPD, including Greg Suhr, have asked for less lethal weapons like tasers, and they have not gotten them. And I'm just wondering, when you say the mayor says that these changes haven't happened fast enough, whose fault is that?
I think that there, politics in San Francisco, you can point your fingers in many directions, right? The taser, I call it for shorthand the taser debate because it's come up so many times in San Francisco now. I think we're in our fourth or fifth round of this. There is legitimate people who are against tasers have a nuanced argument against their being used in San Francisco. There are studies that show that their use, their introduction into a police department, I should say, can sometimes increase uses of force, including deadly uses of force. I think the strongest.
But nonetheless, just let me just interrupt for a moment. San Francisco is one of the very few big police departments, big city police departments that don't have tasers, right?
This is true.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, that's true. I think there's only one other major police department in the country that has not been armed with these devices, and there is a strong push to get them into San Francisco now. Their critics say, you know, they're not necessarily non-lethal, that people die from their use. But I think more, they're asking for transparency on the department's use of force right now. And before that is presented, people are reticent to give another tool to the SFPD that could be misused.
And when you say transparency, what does that mean? What are they asking for?
Well, data on uses of force in the police department. Anytime an officer puts somebody into what they call a control hold or uses a baton or uses one of these less lethal impact shotgun rounds, these are all called uses of force, right? And they're meticulously documented. The police department isn't publishing this information despite repeated calls for that to happen.
And Greg Suhr, a longtime veteran of the department, he was not an outside choice. He was an insider when Mayor Lee picked him. Fair to say he's a cop's cop? I mean, someone who was respected and liked by the rank and file?
Well, I think that, you know, we could certainly point to the fact that he's had more than three decades of experience in the SFPD. The San Francisco Police Officers Association did use those very words. Greg Suhr has been and always will be a cop's cop. They respected him. At the same time, he did push back against the union sometimes. They weren't always in bed with each other. They weren't always so close. Now, critics of the department and critics of Suhr would say they were too close, that he was too close to the union, that he owed the union too much.
As I said, this is a half an hour segment, so we want to go to the phones in just a moment. But I guess you could say, too, that the rank and file disrespected Greg Suhr in the sense, at least these cops who were sending these racist and homophobic texts. I mean, that was sort of either a sense of, well, we're not going to get caught, or, you know, who cares? You know, it was defying certainly the sort of standards, I think, that Greg Suhr was trying to impose, wasn't it?
And we've had two sort of rounds or batches of those text messages coming out and being public. The first was in March of last year of 2015, and then we had another round this year. Greg Suhr, from the get-go when those text messages became public, said that these kind of sentiments show that an officer who uses these words falls below the minimum standards to be a police officer. He was very clear about that, yet it seems to keep happening.
Yeah. All right. That's Alex Emsley, KQED's reporter, covering the San Francisco Police Department and the resignation of Greg Suhr. Let's go to the phones again. The number to call, 866-733-6786, and we'll start in Redwood City. Paul, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think that Alex makes some great points on both sides about Mr. Suhr and his service with the department. I think one of the difficult parts is, and positions he's put in, is to react to these things as soon as they happen. And, you know, for him to try and react as soon as they happen and, let's say, come down on an officer extremely hard, he's operating without all the facts. And I don't think that's fair to him. And I think this has to do a lot with the media, and his whole resignation has to do with the fact that the media covers, you know, these five people who want to go and hunger strike, not thinking about the people who are impacted on the other side. This woman yesterday who was shot and killed, you know, nobody, I don't think that any of these officers wake up every day and they go to work wanting to kill anybody. It's the exact inverse. They do this because their lives are threatened, and they feel as though this is the only way that it's either them or this person.
Yeah. Let me just bring Alex in here, because certainly there are situations where officers do feel their lives are threatened. The incident yesterday where this woman in the Bayview was allegedly driving a stolen car, she had crashed the car, I understand, and they were maybe trying to get her to come out of the car. I mean, is that a case? I realize it's very early yet. We don't want to jump to conclusions, but is that a case, and have these other shootings clearly been cases where the officers felt their lives were in jeopardy?
Yeah, it's very hard to say. I would, you know, just giving the benefit of the doubt, I don't think an officer would ever get to the point where they were using deadly force unless they had some kind of an inkling that that could become the case if it's not already the case. You know, there's a couple of different things that we can talk about. One thing that we've been hearing a lot out of people like Greg Suhr, other members of his command staff these days, is that there are kind of two different standards that a police department can aim for when talking about use of force. And one is the legal standard set by the United States Supreme Court, which gives a lot of deference to the discretion of the officer. It is very hard to sort of for attorneys who might be interested in doing so to prove that a on-duty lethal use of force is illegal or an
deliberate
illegal homicide, a murder of some kind, or manslaughter.
Yeah.
But there's a higher standard, which has become the community standard, which is just, you know, sort of is this when a community views this, because we see more and more videos of these things, is this acceptable? Is this acceptable for how their police department should operate? And the answer time and time again in San Francisco over the past few years has been absolutely not.
Yeah. All right. Paul, thanks very much for the call. Let's go now to Andrew in San Francisco. Welcome. Andrew, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, go ahead. You're on the air.
So I don't understand why we're getting rid of the police chief over something. And to the previous caller's point, all the facts aren't in. And this isn't related to a video. This isn't related to, you know, previous instances. This is a isolated incident. And it doesn't seem to me that we should be firing somebody over what the social justice warriors, you know, who are protesting downtown want to have on their, you know, calling card to say that I got rid of the, you know, chief of police of San Francisco.
Yeah.
Seems like a total overblown situation.
Well, Alex, I mean, this is a one incident, and yet, as you've pointed out, it's part of it's the last in a series of incidents and texting scandals. There's also been a lot of trouble between the police chief and the DA, not saying that was the police chief's fault necessarily, but there was a lot of stuff piling up, right? And this, although this particular incident in and of itself might not justify firing, it is, I would assume, the accumulation of all these things.
Yeah, well, you know, from the mayor's perspective, I think that he had a lot of loyalty to Greg Suhr, you know, respected his work, but at some point the buck does have to stop at the chief of police, and when the department is consistently more and more embroiled in very high profile national scandals, it became untenable.
Yeah. All right. Andrew, thanks very much for the call. Again, the number if you want to join us for this half an hour segment, 866-733-6786. There were, of course, recently these hunger strikers that had planted themselves protesting in front of the Mission police station on Valencia. They also went to City Hall and testified and protested. A lot of media attention for that. However, there was also in the past week or so some elected officials who were beginning to speak up, members of the Board of Supervisors, I think at least four of them, calling for the chief to step down. Let's hear from one of them. This is Supervisor David Campos, who represents the Mission.
For a while, I thought that maybe he could make the changes that are needed. But far too many things have happened under his leadership.
Alex.
It shows, I think that what David Campos was saying is that the chief, even with people who were sort of consistent critics of his, enjoyed a lot of respect. And the calls from, you know, as the caller put it, social justice warriors, people who in the community and who might come from an extreme a bias, they have a side that they want to put forth. Those have been around for a long time, but it took a lot to get people like David Campos, who's been a consistent critic of the police department for many years, to get to the point where he said, I think that the chief needs to go.
And I would point out, too, there are many people who were on the Board of Supervisors and in the community who appreciated that Greg Suhr, unlike past chiefs, when these problems blew up, was there in the community facing very angry community members, listening to people shouting at him and saying all kinds of things. So you have to give him credit, and I think a lot of people did, for not hiding from the problems. I mean, he was the out front person. He was where the buck stopped, even in those very difficult crises kinds of situations.
Yeah, and from what I understand, you know, that was a part of his philosophy. He always wanted to be there. You know, I've been in late night meetings that the chief is at when he's very exhausted. I'm somewhat exhausted, but he looks a lot more exhausted than me. But he was consistently present in the community, and I think that that does deserve some credit. However, there is criticism of that too, specifically if you're talking about his presence in communities very shortly following fatal officer-involved shootings. The criticism became that he was attempting to steer the narrative toward one that said the shootings were legally justified, regardless of whether they actually were.
And there were times where he may have spoken too soon in justifying them when perhaps all the evidence wasn't in, or the evidence later contradicted what he said.
And there are two major examples of that. A shooting in April of 2015, that was the shooting in the Mission District of Emilcar Perez Lopez, a 20-year-old Guatemalan immigrant. The chief initially said that Emilcar Perez Lopez charged at officers with a knife held overhead. Later, an autopsy came out showing that he was shot six times from behind. And I'm realizing that I said that in April, but that I had the date wrong. That was when the autopsy came out. I'm sorry about that. And then also sort of more high profile, the shooting of Mario Woods, December 2nd. In the Bayview, video showed that the chief's statements were hard to square.
And that's the one I think that most people have seen now, where he was surrounded, Mario Woods, by, what, six, seven police officers? And
at least, and more, I think.
And more. And it was all caught on video. Very disturbing. All right, let's go to the phones again. And Steve in San Francisco, you're next.
Yes, hi. I want to thank you guys for talking about this very important issue. I'm a Lyft driver in San Francisco, so a lot of what you say, all my passengers pick up and they hear it, and I'm glad to share it with everybody. But I'm I was raised in the Bayview, and it seems like a lot of the callers calling in are speaking from a position where they haven't been directly impacted by the actions of the San Francisco Police Department. So what I would like to say is that it's different when you're on this side of the thing. And when the last person who talked about the community standard, I think that's very important for listeners to understand that this is not an acceptable way. And if the chief had really been pushing the reform that he said he was going to implement before he leaves, he wanted to stay and implement this reform, then he would have been pushing to his officers to absolutely use deadly force at the very least last resort.
Yeah,
and it doesn't seem like somebody's trapped in a car that she's been crashed in would pose any reason to use deadly force as the last resort.
Yeah, and Alex Emsley, I think there's – excuse me. Sorry, Steve. I just want to jump in here for a second. One of the things that the department has been trying to do is to de-escalate situations. Now, I don't know if that would have applied in the situation yesterday morning in the Bayview. I don't know all the details. I don't think anyone does. But that clearly was, there was the shooting also in of the mentally ill woman that went to the Supreme Court. And after that, the police department, this is, I think, before Greg Sir, was talking about de-escalating, having these mental health teams. So, I mean, that's another thing that was on the way to being implemented, but obviously not fully yet.
Sure. And you know, I think that that statement is accurate, but I also think that some people within the department would take issue with it. We're talking about what they call crisis intervention training. The department has said they are, you know, there are times that the department has said that that program has been fully implemented. What's come out recently is that they have a lot of people who have gone through this training, but as far as implementing it so people who are trained to de-escalate, who have this extra sort of skill set that they've worked on, are dispatched to calls, that still isn't in place.
Yeah. All right, Steve, thanks so much for the call. Let's go now to Oakland. And Stacy, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Go right ahead.
So my sentiment is this. Honestly, there has to be some sort of accountability that doesn't just stop with the police chief. Yes, he's got a lot to do with all of this, but Mayor Lee also should very much be taking his role. Whatever happened to cops working to disarm folk? And yes, folks should be punished by law if they're committing a crime, but not by death. It's, you know, it's concerning. I'm seeing that the administration in San Francisco, the cops are starting to feel like they're really above the law. We've got the hot cop with the DUI and so on and so forth. If there aren't any direct repercussions for these individual officers, where do we see the institutional change come from?
Well, and Alex, I do think that a number of officers have been relieved of their duty, fired. Is that right?
Yes, yes. But we don't really get to know about it, or we don't know very much about it. We don't know the details
about
it.
Because it's a personnel issue.
Well, and it's a matter specific to California and specific to California law. There is legislation being floated right now that would change some of that, that would give some sort of a transparency or a perspective to the public about when an officer is disciplined and for what, like the case is in almost every other state.
Yeah. All right. We are short on time. This is a half an hour segment. Let's try to get another call in. Ala Abdel from Los Gatos. You're next. Welcome.
Hi. Good morning for you guys. It's a really nice show. I want to explain something to you guys. I know the police officer, they are not perfect. They are human. None of us being police officer, those guys under tremendous pressure to choose the right things. I mean, why when police officer do something like that, all the world go upside down? It's like the woman is stealing car. I mean, put yourself in his shoes. I mean, you know what happened if we are doesn't have any police in the street?
Yeah.
Those guys do a wonderful job to keep us safe.
Yeah, and I think everybody acknowledges that. Sorry to cut you off. We are getting to the bottom of the hour, but no question that police officers, CHP for that matter, sheriff's deputies, they all have a difficult job to do. They have to make split-second decisions. Sometimes they make the wrong decision. Alex, so we've got just a couple of minutes left. We haven't really gotten to the fact that crime is going up in San Francisco, particularly property crimes. That's another issue, I think, that was bubbling underneath the surface. The mayor now has named Deputy Chief Tony Chaplin, a 26-year veteran of the force, to be the interim chief. What do we know about him? And might he become the next chief, do you think?
Well, I don't know a ton about Tony Chaplin's earlier career, but I have spoken to him several times, and I do know in the past couple of years he had a very quick rise. He was in command of homicide investigations, then was in command of all investigations, then was quickly bumped up into a deputy chief position where he was to coordinate these massive reforms that are happening in collaboration with the U.S. Department of Justice Community-Oriented Policing Services Office. When I was there with him the day that he got that promotion, the look on his face was absolute surprise, and he told me that. I said, Chaplin, I didn't expect to see you in the deputy chief's chair. He said, you didn't expect it. Well, now he's the interim police chief running the entire department.
And now the buck stops with him. And we'll see.
Well, at least in an interim fashion.
In an interim fashion. All right. Alex Emsley, very much an ongoing story, a developing story, and I suspect we'll hear more about all this today as you go back to the newsroom. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Scott.
Alex Emsley, KQED's reporter on top of this story. And coming up in the rest of this hour, Loretta Sanchez, the Orange County Democratic Congresswoman, is running for the U.S. Senate seat held by Barbara Boxer. She'll join us to talk about why she wants to be a senator and what kind of senator she'd be. I'm Scott Schaefer here for Mina Kim. Stay with us.